Our gospel reading this morning is taken from Matthew's gospel, and this is part of what they call the apocalyptic writing that is dealing with the end times, so to speak. But there's much more, many more layers to this than appears on the surface, so let us open ourselves to the Spirit of God. But about that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away, so too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken, one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. The Gospel of the Lord. And so there we have the lesson for today. Now, who would like to make comment or add a thought?
I'm ready.
Well, good for you. Good for you. That's wonderful.
Do I dare follow?
Just say amen, Dave.
Growing up Catholic, I remember this sermon every Advent, and remember my parents talking about it. And it seemed like it was a lot worse. I think you've kind of modified this than it really is. Talked about it would be horrible for women with children if it came in the dead of winter. But it was always, as a kid, it was always that, living in the nuclear age and the Cold War era, you always wondered what was going to happen. And I find it ironic that this is the sermon the day after Fidel Castro passes away. So. You know, that's a big part of the Castro and Khrushchev, and that was a big part of being a teenager or a young adult in those days. But I guess if she's ready, I'm ready too. So.
Well, you're old.
You're going together, right? Hey.
With that in mind, I have a feeling that we passed that, like in the 70s, people were kind of tired of listening to that the Soviet Union was going to take over the United States and the world was going to fall into darkness. And we passed through that in the 80s, 90s, and the pendulum seems to want to take a different direction. In my point of view, since the world is changing, the energy of the world is changing, and I'm not a person, when I speak of this, I'm not the kind of person that is like the way out there kind of person. People are recognizing that the energy of the world is changing. This is what we are facing, but what are we facing? What direction are we taking? And if this is what God is presenting to us in the sense that we need to prepare for the coming of Christ, in what world is he going to settle in? Something that is going to be devastating or something that he has to clean up again? Or does he settle in And this becomes heaven on earth. That's my question.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Barbara.
This is not as sophisticated as what you said, but when I was younger, quite young, maybe 12, something like that, I remember hearing this, and at that time, I thought, well, I will be one of the chosen few, and I thought that was great. I didn't realize the ramification of what it meant. Nancy says she's ready, and that's wonderful. I'm not so sure I am now. I have a little bit of confusion. But I think for me what this means is that you have to be vigilant every day, every hour, every minute in your life as to how you react and how you behave just in everyday things that you do. And that's how I interpret being ready. I don't necessarily follow through, but I do try. So I think that's maybe what it means for me.
Thank you, Barb.
In reference to the Soviet Union and the crisis that we had at the time, I had the fortune of going to the Soviet Union several times, Leningrad and Moscow, in Samarkand and Tashkent. And everywhere that I've gone, one of the conversations that we had was that we found that we had the same fears. We had the same fears, and people are people, and they just want to watch their family grow up and watch their kids and break bread together. And they really had the same fears that we did. It wasn't just us. On the other hand, when I look at this, it kind of reminds me of going to the deli. When your number comes up, you never know.
Pastrami on side. Anyone else? This is good. This is very good. Okay, right side, wake up. I'm only kidding.
I guess the first thing I think about when I read this passage is that we have no control over what happens, or very little control over what happens in our life. So we need to live each day as if it's going to be our last, I guess, which is very difficult to do. I need to focus on to be the best person I possibly can and not be judgmental and be ready and know that it's like the AA prayer. Know what you have control over and know what you don't have control over and realize that you don't have control over an awful lot. So I guess that's it.
So basically what I said is like really way out there.
No.
Not at all.
No, it's different.
Quiet side. I think this is contradictory. Everything is supposed to be forgiven with the death of Jesus on the cross. And so then how do we, and we have to be ready and not sin or whatever, but this is all supposed to have been done for us already. So I just think it's a statement of man saying something, or maybe it's a statement like in Revelations that you just don't understand because it's something that's revealed to us later. I just I always say when things get dark, but there's still God. And after that, I just feel a peace with that. So, you know, I don't believe that we're going to be picked and chosen and for our good deeds, because that's not where it's supposed to be at.
Don? Okay. What is it? Prodded by your conscience, right?
I mean, it's profound thinking, and to me, everything comes down to family once again. In the passage, people were having merriment, probably doing excessive drinking, having all kinds of fun, but to an extent that was out of hand. And the Lord looked at this and said, well, we're going to have a great flood and save the animals two by two and save some people two by two, my chosen ones. And is the world coming to that again? I hope not. But I think we do need to get back to the church. We need to rely on the church because it brings good upbringing in families. That's what the church stands for in my mind. It brings up the stellar people in life. And I hope that we don't get away from, we bring the younger people back into the church and into the fold, because that's my fear in life, that there's not enough of that family-ness. There's too much going on in life, and everybody's running around and looking at Pokemon or whatever it is on their iPhones. Let's get back to the basics.
I think if you look at this in a positive way, there's real power in positive energy. And I find that Advent is a time of reflection. I know Lent certainly is, but I think Advent has its own special time of reflection. And I think it's kind of interesting that it comes the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So I think that in terms of being watchful, John said in a prayer with the choir earlier today, not to worry too much about the future, not to dwell too much on the past. But I think if you take both into account and you count your blessings and you assess where life has been, where you're going, you take responsibility, we have an all-loving, all-forgiving God. So I don't think it's a scary thing that we should be frightened of. But I think it's an opportunity to reflect on your life and to be aware of what you could have done and what you can do, and value the life that you have and how you could help this world now.
Just, I was reading this again, and as I said, as a young person, I thought it was a good thing, but, and I'm familiar with this, but this kind of seems horrible, that understand the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming. That doesn't sound too good. And I don't connect God with being a thief, so I don't understand that.
Last one over here, Jim. I think the point was basically, if you would be prepared for a thief, why not be prepared for the coming of God? No, that's perfectly okay. That's what the word says.
I think, first of all, that this the content here is involving an awful lot of people by implication when they say that there's two in the field, one will be taken, one will not. So that it gets a very vast coverage of individuals, but it doesn't say which one of the two. It doesn't say anything about how they're going to behave until it gets to the end, where it says you must be ready. And I think this is a message for each individual as compared to the masses. It's for each of us to take this in and understand that we do have decisions and control of our behavior and of our thoughts and our the things we can do, or, you know, we have a conscience. And this is like, he's putting it out there. You guys know what's right, so just, you want to be there when the Son of Man is coming, then follow your guidance.
It stopped. Just very quickly, the gospel passage as we have it, this is my own thinking on this. I'm kind of out here scripturally, but I think there's a clash of ideas here, and it's obvious. You've said it. You've seen it. What we have here, if we take the reading and know that there's two parts to it, the first part and the last part begin with but. Okay, but about that day and the hour, and then go down to, but understand this. That's the one passage. That part of the gospel passage really is reflective of Jesus being prophetic in his own time, knowing that he has to deal with the Hebrew understanding of life and the Hebrew understanding of God. And he has been teaching by his life a very different God from the one that the Old Testament or the Hebrew Scriptures prepares us for. The one in the Old Testament is very volatile, is very vengeful, is very judgmental, does a lot of killing, all those kinds of nasty things that we don't think God does. Jesus has never, ever avowed any of that. But as a Jew, he understands, he's talking to Jewish people, that you have to meet people where they are. And so as part of his ministry, he addresses what happens, what's going to happen in the future. That was a necessary literary part of Hebrew culture. In the writings of, eschatology, what we call the things of the last days, and apocalyptic writing, which are images that you see throughout the prophets about doom and gloom and the stars darkening and the wars going on and the earthquakes and all those kinds of national and natural disasters. Those kinds of images were used to help underscore the fact that we are not worthy of being in God's presence. We can't even say the word God if you're a good Jew, because that's blasphemous. And so Jesus has been talking about God all along, you see. But in Judaism, you don't say anything about God because you have no business, like Moses standing before God in the burning bush. That was the most unbelievable experience that Judaism ever had. And it only happened once. The rest of the time, when God came to talk to people, it was a cloud over the meeting tent. We don't know anything that happened in there. It was the cloud or the fire coming out of the Holy of Holies, and we don't know what happened in there, except that people were doing their sacrifice. It was all kind of behind the screen. So how is God presented to people? You better be afraid, because you saw what happened to Noah. And people were drinking and eating and marrying. Did you ever think about this? Is that the only way to describe the joys of life? Eating, drinking, and being married? I thought that was kind of a strange, limited point of view. But that's where they were. And so Jesus is saying, that's all very true for you. However, he didn't hold back in his teaching to contradict the whole thing with the kind of idea of God being merciful, forgiving, understanding, compassionate, open to everybody, grace for everybody, etc. Now, the middle part of this story about two in the field and one is taken, and two are doing this and one is taken and one is left. Have you heard about the rapture? You know about the rapture? The rapture is a Christian creation. It's a Christian creation because the writings of Paul, remember the Gospels are written after Paul. Paul is dead by the time the Gospels are written. So all the teachings you have about God and Christ and afterlife, etc., in Paul have already been done. The people know this. What you have in that little slice there between those two major parts is as an indication that the early church wanted to stick in there to make sure we understood the Christian possibility, according to Paul. And that was a very judgmental God. Sin was the major proponent for every living person. And your goal in life was somehow to overcome your sin in order to be acceptable to God. Now, even though they had communion, and they said, this is the body of Christ. No, this is my body. This is my blood. As you pointed out, this was an act of redemption for everybody, always and forever. They found a way to say, yeah, but some people don't belong coming to this. They're not worthy. There's a little bit of Judaism coming in. You say, you're not worthy of it. And so they started putting blocks in people's lives, ways of being aware of your imperfection, and always on the side where David and I, and those of us who were brought up Catholic, know very well, you grew up in terror that at any point, any little thing you did wrong was going to be your annihilation and damnation to hell. And God was coming at any point like the Bigfoot squashing ants at a picnic. We lived that way, combined with, as you pointed out, Agatha and a few others touched on the world organization and about, you know, we grew up in a Cold War and Russia was the enemy and we were hiding under our desks about the bomb and all the rest of that kind of stuff. We grew up in terror. Now there's a revival of this rapture stuff because the early church believed that he was coming back in their time. Paul says, you know, again and again, be ready because it's going to happen at any moment, so don't get caught with your pants down, so to speak. They believe that. And there's been now a revival of that. That has been gone by the wayside for many years until evangelical religion came into being in a very powerful way. And a few years back, there was a whole series of books called the Left Behind series. Did you read any of them? There were a number of them, rather interesting, but the point of view is that some are going to be, you know, there's a plane flying across the country and the rapture happens and all of a sudden there's nothing but clothes in a lot of seats because they've been taken and all the rest of these crumbs are going to land and go into the miserable years of a thousand years of the operation of Satan in the world. All of these others have been saved. That's the rapture. That's what that middle part is about. It comes from basic first century Christianity. And so they stuck it in the gospel just to remind us that that also was going on. What do we do with it? Well, you all have said very nicely where you're coming from and how you understand it, and you're all right. Theologically, people would have difficulties with what you have said, but the truth is, the only thing I can understand and live with is that any time there is an act of love that takes place in the world, the second coming of Christ takes place. Any time there's an act of decency, of forgiveness, of compassion, whether it's by profession, as the ambulance people take care of people, as the Eagle Scout did in saving people, bringing them back out of a narcotic death, hospital people, police people, professionals on all levels who take care of people, every one of those things, even though they are not aware of it, because we don't think in those terms, what this gospel is pointing out is that that moment, the second coming of Christ is taking place, because apart from the love of God, we believe all goodness comes. Apart from the love of God, this would not happen. And it doesn't happen because we are choosing it. It happens because people like you, who have an ear toward faith, who are open to that possibility, can look beyond the normal, can look beyond the circumstance, and recognize something different. I had an experience of a man who came to me when I was a priest in the rectory. He was just gotten out of Vietnam about 2 months before. A very scarred man was living on the street because his family had disowned him. He was very into drugs. And he came, knocked on the rectory door one day. And it happened to be at a time in my life when I felt overwhelmed by my life. We don't need to go into details. But if you've been there, if you've ever had a moment where you think, my God, it can't get worse than this. What am I doing here? I was there. And he knocked on the door. And he came in. I had him come in. We sat down. I got him a cup of coffee. We talked for about an hour and a half. And when he left, I realized the second coming of Christ had taken place right there in that room, because I saw life altogether differently. I saw no reason for hope. And then hopelessness walked in and reminded me of what hopelessness really is. That is what I'm talking about. And so being prepared is not only being prepared for it to happen to you, not knowing the stranger or what circumstance that's going to all of a sudden wake you up to a truth, but it's also being prepared to be used for somebody else. You just may be the second coming of Christ for somebody else and not even know it. So as the gospel says, keep your eyes open, be ready, and recognize that God is with us as we proclaim. Amen.